And here we go. It is Friday morning, Friday, April the 9th, 2021, 15 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Pastor Spot, a weekly radio ministry of Community Christian Fellowship here on WWGH Radio. Now remember, this program can be heard live every Friday morning at 11:10 a.m., Sunday morning at 8:15 a.m., and Wednesday afternoons at 3:15 a.m. And now the host of our show, Pastor Steve Whitaker. Pastor, how are you?
I'm good. Good morning, Scott.
Yes.
What a beautiful sunny day. I love this weather so much. And we had a little bit of rain yesterday. I don't think we got near what they said we were going to get.
No.
I started mowing my lawn and just getting it started. I've had a problem with it. So, you know, those kind of things you got to work on and keep going, make sure that everything's working right. But still, the weather is just so beautiful. And all these bulbs are coming up everywhere.
They are. Pull that mic a little closer to you. There we go.
Is that better?
Now we're in good shape.
All right, we're in good shape. You know, we are Community Christian Fellowship is who we're sponsored by. We're at 209 East Water Street in Prospect. Our phone number there, if you want to reach us, is 740-494-2222. And also, we are sponsored by Jeff's Bicycle Shop and Mid-Ohio Insurance Solutions. Man, it's great to be here. I want to tell everyone, if you have any, want to call in, maybe you have something you'd like us to pray about or anything at all, join the discussion. We are at 740-383-9940.
Four four.
See what I did?
It was close.
3399944. You need to write it up there for me, Scott.
I'm gonna have
and then
to.
Then I'll never miss it.
We'll have to put it up in here.
We're a lot of good things happening. I want to, you know, last week was Easter Sunday, and I was just so pleased to see the amount of people that came out, and we had a great Easter Eve service. Good Friday service. Where's my mind, right? it's been one of those mornings. Excuse me out there.
We'll get there.
It's Christmas Eve, Steve.
It's Christmas Eve.
Good Friday. Hey, I'm going to read something from Galatians this morning. No other gospel. Verse 6 in Galatians chapter 1. I am amazed that you are so quickly turning away from him who called you by the grace of Christ and are turning to a different gospel. Not that there is another gospel, but there are some who are troubling you and want to distort the gospel of Christ. But even if we or an angel from heaven should preach to you a gospel contrary to what we preach to you, a curse be on him. As we have said before, I now say again, if anyone is preaching to you a gospel contrary to what you received, a curse be to him. For am I now trying to persuade people or God? Or I am striving to please people? If I were still trying to please people, I would not be a servant of Christ. And I think that is such an important thing that Paul says there, is that we are to please Christ and desire to please Christ, not to desire to please people. And what I always try to explain to people is, if we please Christ and do what Christ says, the natural thing that'll flow out of that is to be pleasing to people. Because God does not produce hateful Christians, and that's not what he's supposed to do, nor does he do. So it has a lot to do. How do we treat people? What's important in our lives today? Anyone that listens to this show very long at all or knows me, Scott, knows that I have a real heart for children. Matter of fact, in the back of my truck right now, sitting out here in front of the new permanent home of WWGH on South Prospect Street, my truck has, I don't know, probably somewhere between 175 and 200 lunches in it for kids this weekend that I'll be dropping off when I leave here. And, you know, kids are so important. I was having a conversation yesterday with a lady that lives in town. She has a business, and she's had not only had her own kids, but she's known some heartache through that, and she's lived in the Prospect community her entire life. And we talked about parents just letting their kids go. You know, there's no guarantee that our kids are going to turn out the way we want. We know that. And you can have two kids in the same family, and one will go one way, and one will go the other way, raised exactly the same way. But parents, you need to, the odds are with you if you take good care of your kids. I've shared this story before. I'll share it again. Several years ago, a man called me and asked me to come over and to talk with him and have a word of prayer with him. He was recently divorced, like maybe a year and a half. And he was having trouble with his boys. They were starting to do things that showed they were really struggling inside. And the school had called him, and I came over, and I told him something. I said, you know, I've known you, and I see you a lot. I said, since you've gotten divorced, your primary focus seems to be on dating women. And who am I going to date? You do it all the time. I said, you have the boys during the week or on the weekend, and someone's watching them, or they're running the streets because you're out on a date. And I said, right now, I said, you got two boys that in 5 years, they're going to be adults, legally. And I said, you take the next 5 years, and you devote your life to raising those boys the way you know you should, and the way you know it's right. And because this guy had been brought up in church, he knew he was a good all around guy, and he so bottom line is he went ahead and did what I said. Usually people don't, but he did. And I said, you know, you've got a choice. In 5 years from now, you can regret the rest of your life the decisions you made, or in 5 years from now, you can be proud of two boys. And he took that to heart. And he had his boys involved in everything, and him with him. They both grew up to be well-adjusted young men. And he, at that point, went on with his life, and it worked out fine. But, you know, parents have to decide that they're going to make that decision that, look, these are my kids. And for better or worse, hopefully for better, you know, I parented this child. I brought him into the world. I need to give them the best that I can while I'm bringing them up. And, you know, when I read that passage about, you know, there not being any other gospel and doing what's right because you need to do what Christ tells you to do, it's real interesting. If you take the Word of God, the Bible, and this is foolproof. This is something you can check statistics on and you can really dig into. If you live according to the principles put forth by Jesus Christ, if you live that way, your life is going to be far, far better, and you're going to avoid a whole lot of problems that maybe you wouldn't have if you didn't. And that's just a general rule. I call it God's universal law of right and wrong and what you do. And, you know, there is consequences for doing things evil, and there's consequences for doing things good, and they're usually good consequences. And, you know, that's so easily in front of us. You know, you're always going to get the argument that, you know, I had my kids in church every week. And boy, he's sitting in prison right now, serving a prison sentence. Well, yeah, those things happen. I mean, this is a broken world, and we know that. But, you know, there's also a difference, I would say, between raising your kids in church and taking them to church on Sunday. If you just took your kids to church on Sunday, you're not raising them in the church. They might get an hour at the most of teaching. The rest of the time, they're in the world. You know, people make the mistake of calling the church these buildings we see around town. Now, those are a church building. In other words, the church gathers to meet there. The church is the body of people. And so when your kids come home from the church, the building, they should still be involved in the church throughout the week through their family. And, you know, a lot of parents say, well, I'll just send them to church, and they'll get what they need, and I'll be okay. What you have to understand is they're desiring to please you and desiring affection from you and approval from you. So what you're in essence telling them is, it's okay for you to go now, but it's really not important enough for me to go. And if parents ever expect their children to follow a path that they're on, they need to be involved in that path with them all the time. Don't you think so?
Well, I would say, but you hear so much of that in every aspect of life. You know, the big one to me is I'll be in a home with, and a lot of times it's a single parent. Now, I'm not condemning single parents. It just seems to be that way for the situations that I've been in. There'll be a single parent there, and they will be using profanity every third word. And then the child will say profanity at a very young age, and the parent will correct them. That's awful, that's wrong. Well, where do you think they're learning that? Where do you think they're seeing that? You know, it's that thing again. It's do as I say, not as I do.
And it's the same thing with promiscuity, with you know, how you are with partners or people you bring into your life. You know, your kids see all this stuff, but then don't expect little Susie to, when she turns 15 years old, to be pure as the wind-driven snow. You know, it's not going to happen.
I'll tell you, you know what, as time has went on, my best guess about people and their promiscuity is that as even people who are in their late 20s, early 30s, if they're single, what I have found, what that more has to do with, to me, is security. They're not financially secure. They're not... at home, they just, if they are alone, they sit at home at night and think about it. If they're a single parent, the kids are screaming, they're at their wits' end, they don't have money. And so if they bring somebody in, and you know, it does lead to promiscuity at some point if it's a relationship, but they have that person who maybe will buy dinner a couple times a week.
Give them that mental break.
Yeah, bring pizza over. They can talk to them at night.
But, you know, there's no problem with having those friends if you set boundaries.
If you set boundaries.
And you know, as far as, you know, I find it sad sometimes. We'll have a single mom come to church and bring her kids, and she'll have two or three or four kids. You can tell she's a stressed-out mom. Why? Yeah, you have to be. I mean, that's just normal. But, you know, then, well, you know, nothing happened. You know, it wasn't as great as I thought it would, whatever the reason is. And what they really miss there, and they fail to see they're missing, is that they're in a place, at least in our church, I know they're in a place where people care about them. People will help them. People will help them with their children. They'll get good counsel. They'll get food help if they need it. I mean, we're there to help people, but it's a thing that you reciprocate. In other words, what I mean is put the time in. Put the time in to show that you really have an effort in doing what's right. When you get everything adjusted, you know, the stress level comes down a little bit. Once it's down and you're really settling in to a proper way of living in life through Christ, the right person is going to come along. And you're going to desire the right person. It breaks my heart to see these young women that got this bad boy complex. It seems like they jump from the skillet to the frying pan and from the frying pan back to the skillet. And, you know, they'll have one guy that they're finally done with. He may be on drugs all the time or not working or whatever the case may be. And this guy will finally break away from this one. And the next time you see him finding a guy, he's a cookie cutter from the guy that went out the door. How do you ever expect to better yourself if you don't desire better for yourself?
Well, you know, it's interesting because to me, the common one obviously is the bad boy, bad guy image. But, you know, I've known people who I think just need a project. It seems to me like the girl needs a project because I'll never forget, I was friends with this girl and her boyfriend didn't even live in the same state. They lived in a different state. And God forbid, thank goodness it turned out okay, but he tried to commit suicide, but he made it. Now, she, of course, was horribly upset by this, but I'm thinking, now, you've got problems yourself. I see them all the time because you live in my area. You're in my atmosphere. And now your significant other, the one who you hopefully can lean on at points, is suicidal.
Yeah, what are you doing with
that? What are you doing?
You know, I think it's good to help people. It's good to point people to help in the right direction. But, yeah, I've got a family relative close to me that every time they get out of one relationship, they go right to another project. And they don't work. You know, it's funny you mention, you know, trying to help people and do things. I was having a conversation with the same lady I mentioned earlier yesterday. We were talking about drug rehabs and all the different programs out there. I mean, we've had Celebrate Recovery at the church. There's a lot of different things and projects out there. But I've said this, and I hold to this, and I've said it for years, that if you have an addiction and it's really destroying your home, which they do. It destroys your finances. It destroys your relationships. If you really, in your heart, want to get rid of that addiction, there are programs out there, in-house programs, that will take you in, and you can live there for a minimum of a year or sometimes even longer. And they go to the extent, they take you somewhere where you're not going to have any contact with those people that helped feed that addiction. They're going to have you have on a regimen every day at a time you get up and a time you do it. Just kind of like a boot camp, but not punishment. And a lot of them even pay these people for work that they'll do. And then they'll start a bank account and they'll help them start managing money. And they grow, and as they grow, they get a little more responsibility. And what they try to do is retrain them and retrain that mind to be back in a positive way that it can, that they can move forward. And of course, most of them are faith-based because, you know, God's a big part of your life. And I think that when we've taken God out of society, people lose a lot of hope. And I know people that have that hope, when they get into situations, including myself, that are difficult, I always know that, look, I have a God that'll make this better, so I don't have to feel like it's a doomsday. But the problem with a lot of these programs is, and the reason that people won't enter long-term programs, is they'll use the excuse, well, man, I got to feed my family. I've got to work. I've got to take care of these kids. I've got to take care of my old lady, whatever it is, or my man, my guy. You're not doing it anyway. All the money you scrape up is to make sure that you feed that addiction. You're being a horrible example. You're not being a spouse. So why not do this? You know, rather than, I'll just do this program, because see, here's the out with that. If you do just a local program where you go in and talk and in and out, you're doing okay, but if you decide that you can't handle it, it's right there in front of you, and you can go do what you did. The other way is, there's no deciding it ain't going to work. You're in that program. And the thing is, even if you somehow see yourself as that provider or that husband or that father, you're not being it. Why don't you go away, take a year, and get your life together so when you come back out, then you can be that father, that provider, that person. You're not going to stop being a father in a year. You're not going to, you see what I mean? Now, it's possible maybe someone's significant other won't wait on them, whatever the case may be. But if not, you're going to handle it differently because you're going to get your life together. And if you stay on the drugs and stay in the neighborhood, they're going to leave you anyway. Or it's not going to work out. So I'm just saying that when it comes to rehab and getting your life together, people need to really consider the long-term program.
You know, though, I don't really know if people see the patterns in life. I was listening this past week. I had a little free time, and I was listening to a podcast. And it was so fascinating because the discussion of the podcast was about a well-known sports figure who has since died and ended up dying fairly young, like in his early heart attack, 53 years old, something like that. And the podcast was an interviewer asking somebody who had worked with them on occasion about those dealings and wanted their honest opinion. Now, this person's dead. This person was brutally honest. They did not like this person. Their dealings with them were not pleasant over the years, and they were not a fan. But at the very end, when they talked about the death, the sudden death at 53 years old, the person said, listen, you know, you wanted my honest opinion. I told you my honest recollection of my meetings in life with this person. They were not pleasant. I was not his friend. But I'm sad he died early. I'm sad he died like that. And I'm sad that I'm happy that at the end of his life, I think there was some peace as opposed to when I knew him. But, you know, we have a saying in life, can't speak ill of the dead. I don't buy into that.
I don't buy into that either. When I was in, I think I was still in high school, there was a neighborhood kid that was just, and he didn't get a fair shake at life, but he was just plain bad. And he drug a lot of people down the bad road with him. I just, in the last year or so, lost a good friend that we were at kids that this guy had introduced to some things, and it just destroyed my friend's life. But anyway, when this guy, he overdosed and died when he was still a teenager. And everyone, oh, you in the field? I said, no. I said, You know, I'm sad that he's gone. That, you know, I'm sad that his life was that way. It's horrible. I mean, this guy had come to me after a almost fatal car accident and talked to me about, hey, I know you know about God, and we talked about it and those things. And he had a choice to make. He went right back to the drugs. But anyway, I said, you know, I'm going to be honest. You know, quit idolizing this person that caused so much pain to everyone. Let's look at the situation with realism, realistically, and say, you know what, we need to watch this stuff. You know, it's a lot of times families will keep someone around in their family that is not only a bad person, but they're a bad influence on every kid and person around them. But, you know, come on, that's Johnny. We can't let him go. Johnny better go. Find a place for Johnny, for him to get help, but get his influence away from those younger kids, no matter what you do, because it's only a matter of time till he takes them aside and says, oh, come on, try this. Look, I'm still around. It hadn't hurt me. And I'm with you, Scott. I mean,
well, you know, it bled into a conversation, you know, the first 3 hours this morning, and we took calls and had great response, but we were talking about areas in Marion, such like downtown and in the South End where the mall is, that are not as prosperous as they once were. But there is this idea that you can't speak bad of those areas because that's not helpful. Well, you know, I really don't know if it is or not, but I know that when somebody comes up to me and tells me everything's fine with those areas, I can clearly see that they're not. So maybe we should address the problem more than just phony around it.
Oh, I agree completely. I remember years ago, many years ago, I was rehabbing buildings down off Long Street in Columbus, and they had these towers that huge apartment complex they had put in, and it was supposedly going to save all those people down there and their living conditions. And every couple of years you'd see a new sign up, total renovation cost blah 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 million, because the people would go in them and would destroy them in 3 years time and their lives would never change at all. And they just kept pouring good money after bad, and the problem was they weren't setting rules and standards for these people. You're saying, look, we give them a nice, clean place to live, and they'll never do anything bad again. That's just false. That's not the way that works. I love what they're doing at the Hope Pregnancy Clinic here in town. They're actually having classes with these young women and with their spouse, and they're sitting down and they're saying, let's look at how we're going to approach life now. You got a baby coming, and they have classes, and they teach, and they give them rewards for meeting certain marks, and they teach them responsibility. Things have to be with that. I just don't believe in handouts for handout's sake. It doesn't do any good, because people will, if they'll just keep, as long as they can get it without doing anything, they're going to do it. You know, if the ice cream store down the street costs $1 for a cone and the one across the street is free, I'm not going to work as a kid to get that dollar to go to that store. I'm just going to keep getting the free one. And I won't work. And I'll just lay around and get fatter on that ice cream.
Well, you know what I think this comes from in life, though? And I think this is the biggest problem we have, is that we don't really we teach people to get a job based on money. And we don't
not happen.
No, but we do it all the time. Because I don't know how many times when people are getting ready to go to college, I will say to them, I say, you're going to college? Yeah, I'm going to college. I'll say, okay, well, what are you going for? And it used to be you would get a lot of I don't knows, which that's okay, because the first 2 years, you don't need to know. And I always thought that's good. Now what I hear 90% of the time is, well, you know, I was going to be this, but then I found out this paid this. And
wrong,
I think,
wrong way to look at it.
Well, you know what? That's how you end up in a, because you get that job that pays so well and you hate it. So you stop going to work. You start missing work. They fire you.
You're grumpy at home.
You get a bad record. And then you need help, because you no longer have enough money to support any kind of lifestyle you're living. If you just found what you love to do, you would want to show up every day. you would stay longer, you would show up earlier, stay longer, and you wouldn't complain about it. But people don't do that. People pick their job based on the money. Why are so many people, and I'm not saying there aren't people who don't love construction, I know there are people who do, but do you notice the number of people in construction?
A lot.
Because it pays well for certain people.
Pays well for certain. You know, it's interesting. Something I always encourage parents to do, and I wish they would take this more and run with it. But I always say today, especially when kids get out of high school that first year, they need to go to in my case, a Bible college. There's Bible colleges that are small, that are inexpensive, and even if it's just for a semester, maybe a year, before they enter a college with the field they're going to do. Because when you leave home, you go from guidance to no guidance. And just to go to somewhere where they're going to keep an eye out on you, for you, but they're going to help you grow and learn and get some of that ground, get some grounding under your feet, so that now when I'm ready to approach an occupation or something, I've got the I just left home out of my life and I didn't really mess up too bad. And I've learned a little bit about self-responsibility and growing. Those things are so, so important. I really encourage, another thing I really encourage is that for the first year or two, if they're going to go to like OSU, go to OSUM and live at home. My granddaughter's done that. She's graduating in 3 years with her teaching degree. Her entire school is going to be paid for through the working that she's done and what she's done. And she's lived at home. Oh, the money that was saved. Plus, she still had that connection with her mom and dad. She wasn't, hard thumb on her, like, hey, you're living under my roof. No, I mean, there was guidance, but she was an adult. And I see that happen, and I see it work so well for so many. And another thing I see is a lot of these kids, he just got accepted to wherever. And 6 months later, they're booted out of school with straight Fs and a habit. And it happens constantly because they didn't have that grounding before they went. And I really think it's important, you know, get your kids' feet under them, a solid foundation. Let them know that they can call you anytime. You know, if they get into trouble, there's adults that want to be a mentor. Be a mentor to that person. Look, you have trouble, give me a call. You can call me anytime, because getting out that first year is tough. And I was talking to a young man named Josh that I know, and Josh has been out of school a couple of years now, out of college. He went to Kent State. And Josh and I were talking his freshman year, and he said, Dad told me, he says, as soon as you hit campus, my parents told me, you find a good Christian campus group of good kids to do stuff with immediately, so that you avoid a lot of the party scene. And he told me later on, he said, everybody was approaching him his first weekend on campus. Hey, there's a party here tonight. There's a party there tonight. He said, and if those people that approached me, because of what I put on my application that I wanted these groups, someone did approach him. And he said, had I not went with them and started that friendship with that group, I was ready to go to one of those parties because I was scared and lonely. And there's two directions he could have went. And I just ask parents to please, it's the rest of their life that's not important. What is 1 year when they're out of high school? I don't even think the service is a bad idea. You know, go in and get your GI Bill in 2 or 3 years, allow yourself to grow up under some guidance. Granted, they still have their weekends, and I know that can be wild too. But the point is, when our kids today leave home, especially being we are such an enabling society, we give them everything. We take them everywhere. They don't have to make hard decisions when they're young. To just turn them out when that's the way they are, is not the best thing in the world at all. Matter of fact, it's very detrimental, usually, to the young person. It's very detrimental. Not in every case, but I think that it usually is. You know, when when I was a kid, I don't mind telling anyone here, I want you to understand something. When I talk about disadvantaged people and people that didn't have anything and that were poor, don't think that I'm talking to you from the outside looking in, because I was on your inside at one point. And when Shirley and I got married, neither one of us had, at that point, had gone to school beyond high school. We got married 6 months out of high school. At least I was. She was a year out. And it was, you had to work, and it was, I mean, you had to scrape. I mean, it was unbelievable how far you had to stretch money. And we started a family early on, and it was hard. But the point is, you keep working towards it. You know, get your family in church. Get some grounding under you. Get a support structure around you. And, you know, today we're fine. I have a wonderful family. I love them dearly. And they're great, hardworking, responsible adults. I see them on Sunday mornings. Three out of our four kids attend the church. One attends in Marysville. And but it's that thing that it's not something that you just, okay, I had kids. I just got to feed them, get a computer, and give them money, and they'll be fine. You got to raise your kids. You got to watch where they're going. There was a real neat thing. They took it. Facebook took it down. I don't know why. But anyway, I posted something yesterday. It was a map of the United States. And it was a map that they'd put together on human trafficking. And they used all these little colored stick pins around the country. The thickest concentration of stick pins was Ohio, dead center. It was covered completely. There's a lot in Florida. There was a lot over on the East Coast and West Coast, but nothing like Ohio. And I posted that copy of that, and then I said, oh, my little boy's fine. He's out playing somewhere. And then I put, is he, with a question mark. Parents, watch your kids. Where are they going? What are they doing? Whose house are they at? We got to do this stuff. Because, hey, you got a quota to meet when they're pulling out of Toledo with a van load, and you're short two or three kids. Let's just hit a small town and grab them. You know, they're running everywhere. And I don't want to be a fearmonger, but I think we have to be realistic, too, and protect our children, because we don't know.
Well, you know, I think it's a long job for some people. And I think, you know, babies are different because, you know, most mothers or fathers know that they don't want their baby to die. So they are going to try to take care of them.
Right there.
Yeah, they're right there. But when the kid can start to walk and talk and maybe eat on its own, now all of a sudden you're a little more hands-off. Just go play in the neighborhood, and because I've got something I need to do here, or I want to talk to somebody on the phone, and I don't want you to overhear this conversation, or whatever it is. You know, that's, you've kind of given up, and then you wonder why the kid screams and yells at you. There is nothing more.
They want your attention.
Oh my goodness, there is nothing more uncomfortable than being in somebody's house when it's nothing wrong when the kid is having a tantrum. I've seen that, but when the parent starts screaming at the kid like the kid is screaming at the parent, that's very uncomfortable.
You see why they do it.
You say, okay, well, this is.
I guess you just scream, right?
Yeah, I guess this is the way it goes.
My dad, and a lot of you can probably relate to this out there. My dad had a look. It was like, when you got that look, you knew that you had about 2 seconds to get it right, or you're going to wish you did. And there was nothing wrong with that look. They were very firm on us as toddlers. Not abusive, I'm not going down that road, but very firm on when I say no or when I say yes. And because of that, you learn that at an early age, and it makes life so much easier for the parent going on, because you've already learned and it's been programmed into you that, look, there's a stopping point and there's a definite yes and no. And you're still going to have those battles, but nothing like these parents that just, you know, I can't believe that today, I hear parents say this, what do you want for dinner, sweetie? Huh? When I grew up, it was, dinner's ready, come and get it, and if you didn't like it, that's your problem.
You know, but in those moments, you know, no matter how people feel about corporal punishment, I've seen the parent yelling at the child and the child yelling at the parent, and you can feel the tension in the room, and they haul off and hit that kid, And you know that their adrenaline is going, and either they're embarrassed because it's happening in front of you because you're in the room, or they're just angry at the kid, and it's very uncomfortable to watch that.
It's easy to fall into that, and I think that one thing we need to learn, and my kids will laugh if they hear this, because I didn't always do it, but I did more than they know, and that is don't correct in the heat of the moment.
Absolutely.
Get away from it, think about what really happened, and then go have a sit down. It may still escalate. One thing I could never take as a father was a child lying to me. And I know that, especially when I knew for a fact they were lying. And I'd even give them an out. I'd say, look, I know that you're lying. I want you to admit the truth. We're going to have a discussion about it. But if you don't, you're going to get in this trouble. Oh, no, I didn't do it. Okay, I did it. Fine. You know, you're in trouble. You won't tell me the truth. You think that you can get away with this, but you can't. But, you know, parenting is a job. It is. And it's a rewarding job if we make it as important as the ball game that's on TV, or if we make it as important as meeting our friends out on Saturday night, or whatever it is you do, go play golf, or whatever it is. You've got to let your children take precedent over those things. Like my friend that I asked him to make his boys his priority for the next 5 years, and now he's enjoying his life as a grandfather, and he's got great boys. What would happen if he didn't, you know? He'd be, oh, no, yeah, he's going through, he's in prison, or you don't know. But what I'm saying is, I'm not saying that it's always the parents' fault, but I'm saying is, parents, you can do a lot to make this different. And just like, you know, in this passage that I read, you know, what the Galatians were having go on with them was they had the truth that was given to them by Paul in the gospel. And then these others came in and they're just wanting to add to it. No, you don't really need to do that. You do this instead. You add to that, do this. He said, no. You know, one text says, you know, oh, foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you? In other words, who's taken your mind and changed what you're thinking? We've done that with raising our children in so many ways today. I had a very strict disciplinarian as a father when it came to punish what we did. But you know what, Scott? Oh, I loved him. And he loved me, and I trusted him, and we snuggled on the couch when at nap time on during Sunday afternoon, and he loved us kids dearly. But we knew when the rubber met the road, when there was something going, we better toe the line because there was going to be a point of meeting. And we've gotten away from that today. A lot of it is parent, you know, people say, oh, no, you can't, you know, if you don't give them what they want, they'll just rebel. No, if you give them what they want, they'll rebel because they have to learn order. How are you ever going to keep a job and listen to a boss if you've never been able to do that? And that's the biggest problem when I talk to employers today, is say, daggone it, we go through the whole hiring process. These people work 2 weeks, get a paycheck, and they leave. And it used to be, it's real interesting, I've talked to people that have have hired people, you know, employers. I've talked to a lot of employers. And at one time I was an employer, and I ran into this all the time. When I went to look for a job, as you probably did, Scott, when you were younger, your thought process was, how can I convince them that I'm worthwhile hiring? I want them to understand I'm going to work hard and do anything they want me to do so that I can move forward, but I just want them to give me a chance to get a foot in the door. That was our general attitude when job hunting. Today it is, how much you're going to pay me? What are my days off? And it's all about them.
You know, I think, though, this was created. I don't remember desired pay being on applications. Now,
it is now.
It is now.
Desired pay
now,
is on applications.
Now, what do you put there?
desired pay.
Yeah.
About $67
an
hour.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's very strange because, you know, if they're looking at that, which I assume they are, if you go too high, they're going to think you're never going to do it because it's not what your desired pay is, when that may not be the case at all.
And when you go too low.
And they're going to pay you that.
They're going to pay you that, or they're going to think, wow, this person doesn't have any real drive for themselves. You know, the best thing to do is know what they're paying ahead of time and use what you write in the plan.
Right, and well, I know, I believe that's what employers have done that for, is I think, in, because they're not going to pay you more than the position pays. So if you're asking for more, when you sign up, they're going to say, well, I know what you wanted, but the pay is this. But if the pay is lower, if you've already, they're going to pay you that, because that's what you wanted.
Yep.
Yeah, but yet I was willing to pay more, they're not going to tell you that.
And if you put it a little higher, they're going to say, you know, but this is what it pays. But
right.
You can work up to that point.
Absolutely.
And then you desire to work to that point. But it's I really feel for employers today. They just are really struggling to keep employees. And the whole drug test thing is another story. You know, I know one company, one local company that had five people enter the workforce out of a temporary service. They hired them on full time at the end of their time. Because they hired them on full time, they all had to be drug screened that day. And as soon as the drug screens came back, they let all five of them go. And how sad is that? It's about those kids, remember? It's about getting your life better. We've got to take personal responsibility for a lot of things. You know, I do want you guys to know something that at the church, the Community Christian Fellowship, and I know there's others. But at our church, I can promise you, if you come to the church with a desire in your heart for your life to be better, or a desire to know God or know what He can do in your life, we're going to meet that need. That's what we do. That's what our whole focus is. We is taking care of people, helping people be healed from the inside. We view the church as more of a hospital than we do a entertainment center. You know, people come in because they have needs. People need to get well. But it's not a long-term care facility for someone that's not going to get better either. You know, you have to have that desire, because then once you get better and you get through those things, then you can help the next person do the same thing. And, of course, you know, our whole goal is for people to come to know Christ. And it's not for anything that benefits us, but it's going to benefit them. And that's just, you know, where we are. I want you to know out there, if you have a daughter, and I say daughters because they seem to be the main ones carrying the ball today, but I know sons enter this too. You're struggling with kids, and someone's not paying what they should or being there or supporting. We'll help you. You know, if you come with an honest agenda, you know, there's people there to help you, and we do have a burden for those people. But you have to decide that your life needs to be better. You've got to make that decision. No one can make it for you. You don't just go here and get a little help at this place. When they get tired of you not changing, go this. That we see that a lot too. But look, you know, you have to make that decision. Do I want a different life?
I think most people do, and hopefully they get it.
I hope so.
It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of time. And sometimes you got to scrape the rock bottom.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. But I want to tell you, there's always a way up, and I look to God for that every day. And we all have our problems. Don't ever look at somebody and say, "If I could just be like them," because you might not want to be just like them. But you're there. But hey, this has been great today, Scott.
Yeah.
I love the new studio.
You know, it's been a lot of fun. It's a project. I like a good project.
Projects are great, aren't they?
They do. They keep you busy, and change is good. You know.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I feel the show's been going pretty well the last month or so.
Yeah, I think we've had a lot of good shows in the last, I think, four or five. Yeah.
Hopefully people are listening and taking things to heart. No one's put a hit out on me yet, so I must be...
No, that's always good.
That's always good.
That's always good when you can avoid the hits. We should let people know again that this program does repeat on Sunday mornings from 8:10 a.m. until 9 a.m. On Wednesday afternoons from 3:10 p.m. to 4 p.m. And it's live every Friday morning from 11:10 until 12 p.m., 11:10 a.m. And don't forget the website. It is there, wwgh1071.com. If you go under Program Archives, it is the first show there, the pastor spot, and the shows are all dated back to the very beginning, back in 2018. I believe it was March of 2018 that all started. And Oh, also download the free TuneIn app. You can listen anywhere for free on any mobile device, which
fantastic.
Is nice.
Fantastic.
Yes.
And our services are at 209 East Water Street at 10:30 on Sunday morning is the main service, so I'd love to see you. Hey, I love all you guys, and I promise you God loves you more.
Stay tuned here on WWGH Radio for more programming streaming live at WWGH1071.com. Remember, much more programming around the corner here. I believe we're going to get into possibly some Family Feud in about 15 minutes, which is a lot of fun for everybody. Stay well and back in 15 minutes.
This is WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, your place for the latest news in politics. From Scott Spears at the 2016 Republican National Convention.
Good morning, we're on the air.
Hey, Charlie, it's Scott.
Scott! Oh, wow! Okay, we've been wanting to hear from you, Scott.
Well, I tell you, this morning I did something different. Yesterday we were outside with the protesters, so today I made sure we got here a little earlier, got through the checkpoints, and I am actually calling you from Cleveland, Ohio, Republican National Convention, inside. I am sitting right now inside the Quicken Loans Arena, looking at the Oregon delegation from the rafters.
No kidding, you're among the seats.
I am in the seats right now. I can see Oregon and Indiana and New Hampshire. I am in the arena.
Wow. Say, Scott, were you there last